Two guys with no credentials. Reviewing Rolling
Stone 500. Greatest album.
Hello again, friends. Welcome to the Sound Logic Podcast. We're glad you're with us. Today we are discussing album number 94 on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. This is Funhouse by The Stooges. Mike, do you know at what point they became Iggy and The Stooges?
Well, you know what? I was going to bring that up at some point because I guess we're skipping ahead a little bit, but my knowledge of The Stooges is as close to zero as you can get. I guess we're doing this now. The first time I can remember Iggy Pop was in the late 90s, and he had a song, a very popular song, I think it did well, on the, what was that weird drug movie? Trainspotting.
Oh.
The Trainspotting soundtrack with Ewan McGregor, called Lust for Life.
Oh, yeah, I know that song.
Remember that song?
Yeah.
Lust for Life. Mm-hmm. Well, that was Iggy Pop, right? So that was, I think, my first exposure to Iggy Pop. That was in my prime, much music, music video watching days where I watched it probably 12 hours a day. And that's all I knew. And at some point, I think I heard or learned that Iggy Pop was in a band called The Stooges, or continued to be. And that's it. That's all I know about The Stooges. Never listened to an album. What about you? Did you know anything about this?
I didn't even know Lust for Life was an Iggy Pop song, so I'm even more in the dark than you are, I think. This is the blind leading the blind here.
You know, and usually for us, it's maybe a hip-hop album or an R&B album or something.
Yeah.
You know, this is, well, we'll get into what this is, but this is more closer to some of the music that we listen to. You know, we listen to the Ramones. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Well, and I think when we did our reviews of The Clash, The Sex Pistols, and The Ramones, we admitted that we got this sort of late 90s introduction to pop punk that was really overlooking how punk arrived at that moment. We knew a few songs by those earlier bands, but I wouldn't have been able to articulate that Iggy is sometimes known as the godfather of punk, or that this album in particular is foundational in the punk music movement. Mm-hmm. And I think in listening this week, it has made me remind myself again of, you know, how little I know in many spaces of the music world, and also how you can love something, a sound, a style, and not know where it came from, and sometimes assume you're listening to its, you know, its sound breakthrough or something, totally oblivious to the way that it's been built up over time.
Yeah, absolutely. That keeps happening.
Yeah,
we do this, right?
That's right.
Yeah, for sure. Before we go any further, should we just do some details?
I think we both have some strong opinions about this one, so we better get the details out of the way first, so that we can get into some preaching.
Sure.
Maybe.
Could I? Oh boy,
what we think about this?
With again, no credentials. Well,
while you're giving the details, should I shout out random sounds?
Yeah. Okay. So this album, Funhouse. I can't tell if it's two words or one word, but anyway you do it, it's Funhouse.
it's two words on the Wikipedia entry for it, so let's say that's two.
When I read the album, like on the album, the F is capitalized, but the H in house is not, and there's no space, so...
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, released July 7th, 1970. It was early in punk. This was the Stooges' second studio album. All tracks written by the Stooges. That is Dave Alexander, Ron Ashton, Scott Ashton, Soon Brothers, and Iggy Pop. Iggy Pop's real name, in case you want to know, is really long. Where is it? It's
James Newell Osterberg Jr.
Jr. James Newell Osterberg is quite a handle. That's kind of punk or maybe emo.
It sounds like he's from London, not from Northern Michigan. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I always imagined him as British. He just looks, yeah. He's got that British attitude.
Yeah.
Okay, so I couldn't find, we usually say how it charted and sales. Couldn't find either. I couldn't find a chart position. Couldn't find sales numbers. So let's assume
zero that it didn't copies chart. Sold.
It didn't chart well and it didn't sell well. Because that's usually the case when we have those numbers. Also, and we've seen this before, there were no singles released. And we have discovered that when there's no singles, and a lot of times that means that the record label didn't feel they wanted to promote the album.
Yeah. Or didn't know what to do with it. That
right,
happens quite frequently,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that the sales are lower.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you don't hear it on the radio, especially back before the internet days, before the streaming days, if you don't hear it on the radio, you're never going to hear it.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're in the record store and you see it, pick it up and then listen to it, but that's just very, very slow. So,
yeah. It's interesting, Mike, with you mentioning it comes out in 1970 and saying that's, you know, quite early for pop punk music.
Yeah.
I don't even think that that was something they would have been calling it at the time.
No.
But listen to these other albums from the list so far that we've reviewed. After the Gold Rush, also 1970.
Okay.
Bitches Brew.
Okay.
John Lennon Plastic Ono Band.
Okay.
And Bridge Over Troubled Water. We also,
wow.
I think we did a recording for Sly and the Family Stone's Greatest Hits, but never published that one because
okay.
The new list came out. But those are the albums that we've already listened to, which, you know, it's a fairly disjointed list in general. But to have this coming out alongside of those things is jarring in some ways to think about that, those all being in the same soup of that time. 1970 is also the year for the Beatles' Let It Be, which we'll get to eventually. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Deja Vu, which you and I both really love.
Oh, really good.
What a weird kind of time for music to be coming out.
Oh, so much music.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting you mention that because you get these groups and individuals kind of at the height of their popularity or at least a peak for a lot of those names you mentioned are huge names, really at the pinnacle of their careers in genres that are peaking.
Yes.
Rock and folk rock. And at the same time, we have this album that is in a genre that is just starting to emerge. And you're right, it wouldn't have even been called punk yet. I read somewhere that it would be considered proto-punk.
Yeah, and in fact, Iggy, as that label came along, kind of rejected it. Didn't
right.
like I, being called punk.
That's very punk rock of him.
Yeah. You reject any label, even if it's the appropriate one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And even Velvet Underground, which is said to be the album that really inspired these artists, that was in 67, right?
Yeah,
that was a few years earlier. Another huge year for music.
Yep.
Anyways, 1970, no singles. Characterized at the time as hard rock, avant-garde, or avant-garde hard rock, or whatever you want to call it. So this was hard rock, and I certainly can understand that at the time because it's not like a, you know, a Led Zeppelin that's very heavy.
Yeah.
But is also very blues based and less experimental than this, right?
Yep.
You listen to the guitar solos and the riffs, it sounds more like, you know, a Neil Young kind of thing, or somebody who's just learning to play guitar, as opposed to a Jimmy Page,
yes,
who's just an absolute master, and everything is clean and produced and rehearsed. Mm-hmm. This is improvisational. That's another thing that they wanted the album to be improvisational, which is,
yes,
interesting. You don't hear that in, you know, kind of punk rock a lot. It's passionate, soulful, but not necessarily improvisational.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
It's also probably due to the way that they recorded. They really wanted to capture that kind of vibe of their live shows,
yeah,
and so they'd push record and they would play the song all together. There wasn't really layering or very minimal overdubbing as well. And they hit it, what they wanted it to sound like anyway, pretty efficiently.
Yeah.
I think it was just in the last couple of years, a box set came out with all the recordings from that session.
Wow.
It's a multi-disc set, but it's like, there are like five versions of track one and seven versions of track two and,
yeah,
six versions of track three. And, you know, for a relatively short album, you can hear like their entire time in the studio, at least as much as the tape was running. It's I think that contributes to this like rough around the edges sound, but also capturing, I'm sure, what it would have been like to hear them live.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Interesting you mentioned that they recorded all together. They didn't record their instruments separately, and also they didn't isolate. So often when you do that, yeah, you may have seen videos of bands playing at the same time recording, but they're each in their little booth, or they didn't do that. They did it. They set up, the producer set them up, and they did a traditional recording setup. And the band hated it. They said, this isn't our sound, because the producer and the record label were arguing it, because I think it's the producer. He wanted to pursue them. But someone else said, like, but they're okay, but you'll never capture what they create on stage. That's what was amazing. So they went and they recorded. The band hated it. So they said, we're going to set it up exactly the way we set up our show. So they took all the extra equipment, I guess, furniture, out of the studio, tried to make it kind of, I guess, echoey, like a stage or an open hall would be, and they put the amps right beside each other instead of having like a fixed studio mic. Iggy had, you know, just a mic in his hand as if they were playing a show, and wow, that's how they recorded it. And, you know, for anyone who's been in the studio, like, it, you know, you really try to isolate and get,
yeah,
exactly that instrument just alone, and if you don't, it can be problematic. Well, they did pretty good, actually. Like, you can,
yeah,
it doesn't sound like it's not recorded poor. It doesn't sound like it's recorded poorly.
Right. And I actually think the band sounds really tight. Skipping ahead,
yeah,
I guess, a little bit to how this sounds, but I'm surprised that his vocals sometimes sound like they really were isolated and out in another room. To have him singing along with the band, and to get the sound as separate as it sometimes feels on the album. Like, I found myself thinking about, oddly enough, Trout Mask Replica while I was listening to this, partially because he kind of barks and speaks his lyrics sometimes.
Yeah.
But it almost felt like a lyric track or a vocal track was just placed on top of the really tight instrumentation at times, which is interesting. And I think I expect a sort of garage band effort to have the vocals kind of melt into the music a little bit more than they do on this album. They're really aggressive and in front of the music, I guess, if that's making any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it does make sense. And it's the word that's used is, it sounds very raw.
Yeah.
And that's, you can hear that right away.
Yep.
Sure. Last kind of note on kind of the recording is that Iggy Pop said that his vocals were inspired by Howlin' Wolf, who's a legendary blues vocalist, you know, from the, I guess, the 50s. I don't know that artist well enough to really hear that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have said, oh, it sounds like a blues vocalist, but I think kind of a raspy kind of thing.
Yep.
That's what he was going for.
Mm-hmm.
Which that certainly comes through.
Absolutely. Similar to Dylan and some other artists we've talked about, he's not going for vocal excellence so much as communicating an attitude with his voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, and he does that.
Using it as an instrument, I guess, another...
Yeah, oh, for sure. Lots of screaming and yelling and...
Yeah. Almost a percussive instrument. Oddly, yeah.
I'll share a comparison I have later, but maybe not later.
Okay.
Do you want to move on to the artwork?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool, kind of a cool image. A lot of effects, and remember, this is long, long before computer imaging and graphics. So anything would have been done manually or with, you know, practical effects or whatever, old school photographic effects. But the colors are red and yellows and oranges. It's a picture of Iggy. I imagine he's singing. I don't think... Does he own any shirts? I've never seen a picture of Iggy Pop wearing a shirt.
His pants are always pretty slack, too.
Yeah.
There's a few live concerts that I... Like, live clips that I looked at today where I was like, whoa, is he actually naked? And it was just because, like, his pants were below the crowd while he was up on stage.
That's funny. On the top left corner, written vertically, so you have to turn your head to read it, The Stooges Funhouse in white, and it's like, I don't know what you even call that. I wouldn't call it a font because I think it's stylized, but it's like when you draw letters, not cursive, but where all the lines connect. I don't know,
it looks like cool. They're neon or something like that.
Yeah, like a neon. Yeah, that's it. Like a neon sign. Like the tubes are connecting. Yeah, but it's white. And then that's just in the top, kind of top left corner, vertically. And then the rest of the album is just Iggy Pop. And it's got this wash. Almost looks like he's engulfed in flames. This kind of swirling, washed out effect on it. I can't tell what's to the... top, middle, right. It almost looks like a fireball or something. I don't know. So black and it's interesting. It's vibrant. You get this sense of chaos and, you know, disruption and passion and all this stuff, mm-hmm. which I think it actually characterizes this album quite so very well.
This is an interesting element. The orientation of this album is sometimes turned on its side so that the title and the band name are the other way, which makes that like orangish blur of someone's face kind of more in tune and Iggy's head kind of leaning on its side. So that's how it is.
Well, there's a face there.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
I think it's the whole band, maybe, just in different positions, because there's like the creepy, it's
Ben, I wish you told me what was going on. And that thing I thought was a fireball, it's like a woman's face.
I don't know if it's like a woman, I think that might be another member of the band creeping in there,
I was looking at this, I just thought it was like swirling, it's a face, it's another face, okay. Well,
start over, take two.
Good job, everybody.
But, I mean,
thanks for tuning in. This is what you get. What
Greg,
I thought was like,
is this one ranked pretty high on your list?
Oh my god.
But the reason that you thought that is because it is so avant-garde, and they're layered in different directions, different sizes, different color palettes. Like the face behind Iggy is red and orange. It is a fireball. It's not a face until you actually see it. It's like the is it a woman or a vase kind of trick photography kind of thing. And it really does depend on which angle you're viewing the album cover. To see it.
I just feel really dumb right now.
Oh, don't do that.
Man, I wonder if there's a little info here on that. Yeah, I got nothing.
It goes with the chaos of the album. Like, you know, we've talked at times about album covers not necessarily fitting with the sound. I like this one. The kind of fiery vibe and the chaotic, disorienting elements. Yeah. It all works for me.
And I thought sometimes you hear music, you think like the cover will be a little more maybe violent, you know. I don't really see violence here. Like even the Clash London Calling is the bassist like mid smashing his guitar on stage, you know. Kind of get that kind of attitude. Anyways.
Yeah.
Check out that album cover if you haven't. Go look it up. It's interesting for sure. Yeah, on the side. I didn't know. The other thing, as we move on, looking at track, there's seven tracks, four on side one, three on side two. What's the running time? Like 36 minutes total? 36 minutes, 26 seconds. Is this the shortest album we've reviewed?
I don't think it's the shortest. I think some of the early Beatles albums eke it out by a minute or two, but it's definitely up there. Very short.
You think so?
Yeah, I think I looked today. The shortest Beatles album.
Please Please Me was 32 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But there was like twice as many songs, but they were all really short.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But definitely one of the shortest ones. Some songs were longer. I'm sure you weren't a fan of the 7-minute songs, Ben.
No.
prefer some shorter tracks. When you started listening, what was the first thing that you thought?
So, this perhaps more than any album we've listened to in the last little while, this album made me think about all the other music, as I referenced, that seems to build off of this. Like I could hear in the way that the sort of like driving guitars reminded me a lot of Cake of all bands.
Oh,
The way that the instrumentation plays with pace, sometimes even getting a little funky, kind of reminds me of a band that'll come not too long after this, T-Rex, which I think has an album that we'll get to in like 15 years if we get to the end of this list that I really like. The sort of swagger in his voice reminds me of Mick Jagger at times.
That's the comparison I would like.
And so like rather than really being enamored with the band, I found myself going like, huh, I wonder, is this where this comes from? Is this like, and while all that's happening, I wasn't really enjoying the music. And I found myself this like having this dysphoric kind of moment of like, why is it that I can hear some of my favorite sounds in this music and not enjoy the music itself? It was a very jarring kind of experience to both acknowledge and hear some of the foundational bedrock of some of my favorite things and not enjoy the music.
Huh. Really interesting reflections there. I found it so it's very in my face, you know, which is not necessarily a negative thing, but just kind of just right up, as you said before, right up front. Vocals right up front, and the guitar is just kind of just almost droning, and often the riffs and solos were just like two or three notes, you know, just like over and over and over again. And it was kind of that was challenging, I think, especially on a first listen through. I was like, okay, yeah, his vocal. Yeah. I really heard Mick Jagger a lot. A few times I was like, man, this really is Mick Jagger. I don't know if that was intentional or unintentional. But just that attitude and aggression.
Yes,
you know, not necessarily lyrically, but in the delivery, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
There's definitely some attitude here. There's also like Avant-Garde. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Really nails it. Like, especially, is it the final track on the second side, LA Blues, that really just sounds like a weird experimental, hey everybody, let's make some sounds.
Is that the one with the saxophone in it?
Well, I was gonna say, I was surprised by how much horns play into this album too. I was definitely not expecting that. But yeah, I think there's some horns. It's just like lots of honking and doesn't.
Yeah,
it's a
very
it's an odd thing. Yeah,
that surprised me. I would not expect, like, I didn't know what to expect from this. I did expect something sort of punk or proto-punk or something like that.
Yeah,
that was my guess on the Stooges. I didn't expect avant-garde. I didn't expect saxophone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, that was kind of a surprise. That was interesting.
Absolutely. It it doesn't have the sort of power chord sound that a lot of punk music came to be later on, and it is a bit funky at times. I guess it reminds me, I heard a lot of the Clash in here too, like punk trying to define its sound, I guess. Which makes sense as it's sort of taking shape, but certainly still drawing on some other genres and influences to get to where it's going. The attitude maybe is the most punk thing about it, not necessarily that the music is pure punk, whatever that is.
Yeah, a lot of the guitar parts are like single notes instead of chords.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not horrible.
No.
It's okay.
I too thought he was British. He's from Michigan. I'm not too far from our home and native land.
No.
But he's hard to understand. And with song titles like TVI and Dirt and Funhouse, I imagine there's something to his lyrics. I just don't really know.
Yeah.
what exactly is going on. Loose, I feel like, could be sexual or maybe drug related. I don't know.
I think it's an innuendo for sure. You know what it reminded me of? I guess it wasn't in the final cut, but you know, there's what's the lyric there? Well, it's kind of rude. In Loose, put it or stick it in real deep because I'm loose, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know what it reminded me of? Like, I think it was the late 50s, Little Richard with Tutti Frutti.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like all these alternate, like, lyrics for Tutti Frutti and references to his speculation of his sexuality.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, one of the lines of Tutti Frutti that is not, I don't think, was ever on any cut was like, you know, if it won't fit, don't force it, or something like that. It's like a direct. But it was like early enough that people like didn't ask questions. So like, oh, that could, you know what? Let's just leave it alone. We'd rather not know. Yeah. But anyways, that, I don't know why that reminded me. But just kind of like, you know, I think we eventually get to a point in maybe the 80s and 90s where artists don't, like when you think about rock and hard rock and metal and then into hip hop, they don't really do as much innuendo. It's just kind of like, we're just going to say it now.
Yeah.
We want to say it, you know.
Right.
But back in, and like innuendo was still risque, but like you could get away with it because I think people were still kind of like, no, they wouldn't really mean that, would they?
Right.
And especially like, yeah, think about like late 50s. I think it was like 58 or 59 when his that first album came out. Like, that's very risque. Anyways, that was a weird comparison that I had in my head.
Yeah. Have you said, do you like this?
I guess you said that you didn't, or like, yeah, you were analyzing. there were aspects that I appreciated. I really liked the drumming.
Yeah.
There were some tracks where I was like, ooh, these drums are pretty sick. Like, I like this. Did not love the guitar. Did not love the vocal delivery all the time. In general, no. Not really, which is funny. We've talked about this before. Like, my younger self probably really, really would have liked a lot of this.
Yeah.
And like, when we listened to the Ramones and Sex Pistols, I was like, I don't love it, but I feel like my younger self would be really angry that I don't love it. But maybe my younger self would have just been happy with the pop punk and third wave punk that we were listening to,
maybe, and not really wanted this
because, oh, that's not my punk rock, you know. I don't know, like, anyways, I don't know, I guess my tastes have changed enough. I want things with a little more structure, I want things a little more polished, I want things a little more intentional, deliberate. That being said, I don't hate it.
Okay.
I appreciate it. I appreciate this early expression of what would become, you know, punk rock. I appreciate artists who might not necessarily be the most skilled at playing their instruments in their kind of genre, in their world, but still use their instruments to the best of their abilities to convey, as you said, an attitude, a message, an emotion.
Yeah.
And they do that very well. So there's definitely some cool things happening. I could go for, like you, Ben, I could go for a lot of these tracks to be a lot shorter.
Just saying something for a 30-minute album. We were sort of chuckling this afternoon when I texted you and said, this is a short album, and it's even shorter when I skip because I'm bored of the track. You know what I did, and I do this every once in a while when I want to try and dig a little deeper in the music, just went back and listened to some old interviews of Iggy Pop. And I think the more I got to know the guy, the less interested I became in his music. I think because he's such a showman, he really wants to do things to provoke the audience. He talked about, in one interview, I think it was a Letterman interview a little later in his career, where he talked about his first time stage diving. He was at a venue where the people weren't really getting into it. And he said something along the lines of, they didn't know how great our music was and what they were missing, so I jumped on top of them to give them something to remember. And I just thought, like, wow, that is a weird kind of arrogance. So, like, feel like your audience is not appreciating you as much as you think they should. Sort of a flip to the Bruce Springsteen of, you know, we'll prove to you how good we are. Sort of like, you should be more aware of just how great we are. And I, you know, maybe made me want it to actually not like their music as much. So I'm sure that there's something clouding my judgment in that too. But yeah, I feel this like affinity for it in aspects, and also an awareness that I don't know if it's middle age or what, but that it's not my sweet spot anymore.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Don't remember us for what we played, but what we did, you know, it's that almost that kind of spectacle. But a lot of times, you know, the music's good too. Anyway, you know, no, like, I think I get the idea behind it, but I wasn't necessarily captivated by it.
Do you think similar to our self-awareness as we've gone through this, that some of the things that at one point would have made people sit up and take notice no longer sounds as revolutionary? Like, do you think there's an element of that in this too? Like,
I think so. No, you're absolutely, and we've done that before. We're like, you know, people, we talked about that with the Stones before. It's like, I saw them before, but at the time they didn't. And I think the same could be said. I'd be very curious to know what might have happened if maybe they had created a few more tracks on the album that were made radio worthy, or a little more radio friendly, I guess is a better term, and promoted this. What might have happened? Because I don't think it was promoted hardly at all. So, you know, I think at the time, this is just really wild stuff. Like, really wild. 1970? And all the bands you talked about before, you know, Simon and Garfunkel and John Lennon, even that John Lennon album is a little edgy too.
Yep.
But this is like just way past that. I think there's an element of that, Ben. We've heard so much of this for the last 50 plus years that it's hard to remember a time when this was brand new.
Yeah.
This could be challenging, but we got to pick a couple of our favorite tracks for Spotify playlist. So is there one you would pick, if not your favorite, at least one to represent this album? With one in mind?
I think I would go with Dirt.
Okay.
It's got a bit more of that funky rhythm that I was talking about shows up here every once in a while.
You picked a 7-minute song?
Yeah, I know. That's one sticking point for sure.
That's not characteristic for you.
Yeah. How about you?
I'm going to go with TVI.
Okay.
As much as there's parts of it that are obnoxious, it is also like it's catchy. Like, I remember that. And he says it so, TVI. Yeah, it's just so... But it's interesting, and I think I like what they do, and there's even a point near the end where it almost like it stops and then they come back in. It's kind of cool. But yeah, I think that would be mine.
We'll add them to our playlist.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They're in there. They're in there. Okay. All right. Let's move on. What has aged well? What has not? This is tough because it's, and we've talked about this a few times recently where we go, well, this was kind of unique when it came out. So how do you, I think for me, I'll go first. You mind if I go first?
Yeah, go for
it. I'm doing it anyways. Avant-garde has always been challenging because even if it's quote good, and I mean, avant-garde is not really out there to be necessarily good. It's out there to be an expression, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been challenging, and I can't think of any avant-garde Like, can you think of anything avant-garde on the radio?
Hmm.
Like, no. I can think of some solos that might be a little dissonant or but there's really, you don't really hear that. So that, I don't necessarily say that it hasn't aged well, but it's always challenging. And a lot of this is avant-garde. I think certainly production quality has improved. I think about a solo, like a Neil Young guitar solo on like Southern Man by CSNY, you know, would have been similar to what I'm hearing here, which I think was, yeah, you said, I think Southern Man's on Deja Vu, so released the same year. So I'm hearing that kind of 2-3 note solo. And you don't really hear that anymore. I think the kind of the distortion has aged, and kind of the attitude, you get that a lot through the punk, through into the 80s and then 90s grunge. But I think in general, I don't think it really ages well to now. Even a lot of the rock acts might not be trying to emulate this kind of thing. So influential, yes, but in terms of right now, maybe not aged so well. What's your take on that? It's kind of a tricky one.
Yeah, I think if you gave me this album and didn't tell me who it was or where it was from, I might say, oh, this is an interesting like high school band trying to capture an attitude or a sound that there's something that they're trying to prove here with this with this music. And in that way, I think it's got that authenticity that we long for in music. That attitude definitely shines through. It's rough around the edges, and sometimes that's a good thing. I don't think these vocal stylings are something that you'd hear a whole lot unless it was an amateur kind of group trying to find their sound and thinking, right, well, if we shout or if we use a raspy voice or something, we'll separate ourselves from everyone else. So I would be surprised if this was like on the radio or getting a big record deal. I wouldn't be surprised to like find it at an open mic night or a dive bar or something like that, a house show here in town, which is an interesting kind of dynamic to have those two things to be true. Given that it is foundational and influenced so much. Yeah.
I like that. Leads us to our next question here. This is number 94, 94th best album ever. How do you feel about that position?
Whew. I feel like this is here for its influence and not for its lasting greatness of sound. It's really fascinating that it's jumped up so much. This has been in the first list, 191. A second list was also not 191. So it's moved up 100 spots.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Very interesting. I don't know. There's a number of people out there reflecting on its greatness in various interviews and how it's influenced them. So it may just be that in certain genres and certain spaces, the people who love it for its attitude continue to embrace it. I mentioned earlier this box set that had all the different, the complete recording session. I think it was like a $400 multiple LP box set. So
yeah.
Someone bought that in 2020 when it came out. It's still people are still longing for this album in some way. So
yeah,
as much as I'm surprised that it's this high up, I guess it is deeply influential.
Right. I don't need it in the top 100. Say that. I respect the influence. I respect that it was, you know, kind of cutting edge, groundbreaking when it came out. I don't know if I understand it as, you know, this is the album that I listened to a lot and really influenced me, kind of thing. Like, or that I really enjoy having on. I mean, that's not really fair because everybody's preferences are different. But, I've said this before too. I also, in saying all that, of course, feel very ignorant in understanding the influence of it. I'm sure if someone could sit me down and teach me a little bit more about how it influenced, I'd have a better understanding and then say, okay, yeah, 94 makes more sense here.
Right.
So I'll throw that in there just to kind of cover my behind a little bit, but it doesn't need to be so high for me. I see it okay with being on the list, but, on top 100, but interesting because I was kind of like, I research and I actually didn't even, I don't know why, I kind of skipped over a part where, what are the other albums? And I didn't even look it up because I kind of thought, oh, there won't be any more.
Yeah.
Which was very rude of me, but, there is one more on this list, their self-titled debut album, The Stooges. Hmm. Is number 488, had been 185. So it was actually a few spots ahead of this album and now is way down at the end of the list, almost fell off. And then there's a third album, Raw Power from 1973. This is, you mentioned the name change. This is where they started going by Iggy and the Stooges. That is no longer on the list. It was around the 128 mark, so it was actually the highest on the last list of the three albums on the list, and now it's not even on the list.
Amazing.
Well, it's so interesting, you know. We ask these questions, I feel like I'll probably never get an answer, but I'd love to know, like, people who were voting, obviously there's people who still like the Stooges, but not that album, Raw Power, right. But Funhouse, yes, it's gone up 100 spots. And their debut has dropped 300 spots, and the other one dropped 370 spots to get off the list. You know, like, an interesting band for sure.
Yeah.
And a band that obviously has made an impact and influenced people. The two of us are just not those people, apparently.
Apparently not. And you know what? Like, we listen to a lot of different music each week. It's foolish to assume we are going to like and appreciate everything. And I need to keep reminding myself of that and not just say, like, I can't believe this is here. You know, I'm not going to love, this is not a review. We're not walking through Ben's top 500 albums, unfortunately.
No, that'd be interesting.
When we finish this, sounds exhausting. List, just compiling that together.
Yeah, and now we get a taste of how hard it was to do this.
Yeah.
Any other comments before we close out here, Ben?
No,
we said actually a lot more than I thought we'd say.
Yeah, we did. Given the way that it, I now see how it fits into the greater music canon. I'm glad we did this, even though I, you know, get to the end and think I'm probably never going to put this on again. I like knowing sort of where things come from and how they get there. And this definitely feels like it fits with that part of our journey.
Absolutely. I'm always excited to listen to new music, explore something I haven't before, even if it ends up being something I don't particularly care for. I really enjoy, you know, just adding another little thing in there to what,
right,
all of this incredible amount of music that is there for us.
Exactly.
We switch genres again next week.
Oh boy.
Big time. Why don't you tell our listeners what we got coming up?
Yeah, we're getting to take a visit to the Six. We up our Canadian content just a little bit by shifting to Canadian artist Drake and his album Take Care comes in at number 95. So I don't think I could even say a Drake song. I know so little about this artist that it's good for me as a Canadian, I think, to spend a little time with Drake.
No Drake songs, eh?
I think I know more about his involvement in the NBA's Toronto Raptors than I do about his music.
Well, it's number 95, and this is the first appearance on the list, so we can truly say that he started from the bottom, now he's here.
Okay.
Is that a song you know?
No.
No. Okay. Oh, that joke is on. All right. Anywho.
Will it make sense after this next album?
I don't even know if it's on the album. I know a few singles, but he's not an artist. I've listened to any full album. So, okay. Until next time, friends, I hope you continue to be well. I hope you take care of yourselves and those around you, those important to you, those close to you. And we certainly hope that you'll join us again right here next time on the SoundLogic Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.